You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today, I'll be doing a special update episode on the Diane T. Francis series, Seeking Diane. So first things first, if you haven't listened to the mini-series Seeking Diane, which is three episodes, stop right here and go back and listen, because otherwise you're going to be so lost. Even with all those episodes, this case is massive and at times so confusing. So attempting to just catch up here isn't going to work. You really gotta start from the beginning. It's been quite a few months since the mini-series Seeking Diane was first loaded into your favorite podcast platform. Diane's story is what really pushed me to actually move forward into doing a podcast. When I met Sherry, I fell instantly in love with her and her mama Diane. And all I wanted to do was to tell her story. I remember Sherry struggling to find people that were willing to tell her story because they didn't have enough people to interview other than Sherry, which some podcasts require. This is a massive, massive case, and they needed a blueprint to show them that they can do this without a bunch of interviews. Not all cases have a bunch of people willing to come forward and speak publicly. That doesn't mean they don't deserve to be told. Sherry's incredible. I cannot explain to you guys how much work she has put into her mother's case. She's done years of research, and she has so much drive and passion when it comes to her mother's case and other cases in the community. I really hope moving forward that more and more creators will pick up Diane's case. It's not an easy one to tell, but it does need to be told. The reason that I'm able to tell her story is because of all the hard work that Sherry has put in. When we last spoke on the podcast, we were actually talking about Sherry's childhood with her mother, Diane, and what she remembers from her perspective of growing up with her mother, and what she believes happened in 2005 before Diane's disappearance. We talked about Sherry interviewing her grandmother, Rose, her grandfather, David's testimony, and about some of the does out there that we're waiting on confirmation from. So we're going to get an update on where Sherry's relationship is with Rose, Diane's mother, what's been happening with Diane's case, and how her family dynamics have been when it comes to searching for Diane. I'm finally going to read out David's testimony so you can all hear about this testimony that we constantly come back to when we are discussing Diane's childhood and the lack of his involvement in her search currently. As we have said many times before, Sherry and Jessica are building the story of their mother's life through others' eyes and the retelling of those events. This testimony paints a picture of how David saw Diane, and I think it's a big part of her story, which is why I felt it needed to be read, not just posted on a blog. Here is David's testimony.
Testimony from David Leslie Francis Sr. My Diane. A cold sweat began to form just below my hairline and began to trickle down my forehead as I paced the floor of the waiting room of the maternity ward. It was July 7th, 1968. And I was in Somerset Hospital in Somerville, New Jersey, and nervously awaiting on the arrival of our first child. As I paced back and forth continuously, now sweating profusely, a woman who looked to be about 40 years old or so, and a hospital volunteer observed my agony as she approached me. "Oh my," she exclaimed. "You've got to calm down, young man. Is this your first?" I assured her that it was. "Well, remember, this is normal and a natural miracle. This event is going to bring great joy to you and your wife, and it'll change both of your lives forever. God must have sent this woman for me. For me, she was an angel, a messenger, bringing me comfort and assuring me that all was going to be okay." She spoke with me for several minutes, her words soothing my anxiety. A few moments later, two nurses wheeled out on a gurney that held a great bundle of joy. She was still not completely cleaned up, but to me, she was beautiful and bright as a precious gem. one of the nurses announced, "Congratulations, Mr. Francis. You have a new baby daughter." I was stunned. I stuttered, "How's my wife?" One of the nurses replied, "Aw, he asked for her. He's going to be a great father." After having seen my wife, Rose, and leaving her flowers, I waited again to see my new daughter. A short time later, I was told I could now see her through the glass in the nursery down the hall. There she was, in a neat little pink bundle, surrounded by several other bundles that were wrapped up in either blue or pink blankets. I was finally able to hold her for the first time, and as I gazed at her, she nestled in her little pink blanket. My heart melted. All I could do was think of the words of a song that was popular at the time, "My Diane." The words included, "Smile for me, my Diane." And at that very moment, what looked like a smile came across her little face. Thus, this magic miracle became Diane. The angel lady was right. My life was now changed forever. Although this story is totally directed towards the life of my daughter, in order for you to understand what formed her personality, I must explain what I did to give my wife and other children a start in our new lives together. My wife Rose and I were both raised in Jersey City, a teeming city much like a part of New York City, which was just across the river. We both agreed that when we were married and starting a family, we would raise our kids in the country. Through a friend of mine, I found a beautiful area in New Jersey, about 60 miles from Jersey City. I bought a small hunting converted cabin in Neshonnak, New Jersey, which came with 8 acres of land. The cabin was set back in the woods about 100 yards from the main road. The property had 100-year-old oak trees, birch, apple, and pine trees also covered the property. There was wildlife all around us. Deer, raccoons, birds, etc. would come right up to the back of the house. The place was right out of a Disney movie. As an incurable romantic and a dreamer, I had envisioned this picture in my mind from the time I was a child. I had even bought an AKC registered collie puppy for Rose while she was carrying Diane so she would have companionship while I was away at work. So you see, I had prepared everything right down to the white picket fence. Farms surrounded the property and the beautiful river was only a short distance from our home. We brought Diane home to what, to me, was a living painting complete with everything a child could possibly need to start in their new life. Those first years with our new baby, although sometimes hectic, were fantastic. Diane was a very bright and happy girl who gave us so much joy. She loved all the wildlife, and she fell in love with a turtle called Timmy. We wrote his name on the back of his shell with nail polish. Diane was a very loving child, and when we picked her up and patted her on the back, she would pat us on the back. She was the only child I ever knew that would do this. She also loved to go down to the river with me and watch kids swim and fish. We would pick wildflowers that surrounded the river and bring them home to her mom. We took her to the farms that were nearby where we would buy fresh eggs, honey, chicken, etc. One farm grew acres of pumpkins. The farmer would put out what was left of them after they were harvested and sold to the supermarkets. So on the road in an old wagon, free for local residents. I would bring one home and baby Di-Di would watch me as I carved a scary face into it. She would laugh out loud and then I would put red peppers for ears on it and light the candle inside. Christmas, as with all the kids, was a magical time of the year. Besides our tree in the house, the three of us would put up a Charlie Brown Christmas tree on the front porch and we would put reindeer ears on Laddie, our collie. Diane loved to play in the snow with Laddie and he would happily pull her in the sled around the property. I had to change jobs a couple of years later, and shortly after our second child, David, was born, we moved into Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I was able to buy a beautiful home in the suburbs that had plenty of room for a growing family. It was a 4-bedroom, 2.5-bath with a big yard and a screened-in porch. Diane started school, and she loved it. She excelled in all of her subjects and was put into a class for gifted children. She loved to recite poems and loved to sing. She could even recite the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. I taught her and her brother some of the songs that I had learned in school when I was their ages. Although Rose and I both had to work in order to keep our lifestyles, they were, for the most part, happy times for us. Diane loved her Miss Beasley doll, and she would take it with her wherever she would go. She was a terrific big sister to her brother David, and they would play together much of the time and hardly ever fought with one another. When they did have a disagreement over toys, they would call one another selfish, which meant, of course, that one of them was being selfish. I spent a lot of time babysitting my own kids while Rose worked during the week. At the time, I was working flexible hours, so one of us was always with our kids. Then in 1973, along came Michael, our third child. To my delight, he was immediately accepted by his brother and sister. Diane watched over him like a second mother and learned how to change his diapers and feed him. The three of them love to watch their TV shows, Captain Kangaroo, Skipper Chuck, Mr. Rogers, and of course, Sesame Street. Diane would entertain her brothers with songs from the shows quite often, and she became a little Shirley Temple. We lived in Fort Lauderdale for several years before moving back to New Jersey for reasons I don't care to get into. I'll just say that my health began to fail badly and the VA hospital was in New Jersey, so it was my only alternative to getting better. My cousin rented a house for us in Rainbow Lakes, New Jersey, another beautiful place in the country. To my delight, Diane adjusted very quickly to our new environment and fit right in with the kids in school that were her age. We lived in Rainbow Lakes for about 2 years until I was able to buy our own house in Boonton Township, New Jersey. This house was also a cottage right on the river in 2 acres of land. It had a beautiful fieldstone fireplace and a big backyard that went right down to the river. The kids loved it there, and they spent many hours playing, supervised, of course, around the river. Once again, for reasons I don't care to go into, Rose and I began to drift apart. Our marriage was in trouble. We separated, and I moved out of the house. I still paid all the bills and visited the kids, but life was not the same. Diane was given more responsibility in cleaning the house, helping with meals, and watching her brothers. This, I believe, was much too much for the then 12-year-old girl to handle. Eventually, Rose and I divorced. I kept an apartment nearby and sometimes stayed at Rockaway at Rita's house. Rita had also gotten divorced, and we met while going through the legalities of the courthouse. Rita was basically in the same boat as I was, and we kind of supported one another emotionally. I continued paying all the bills and spending time with the kids. Rose started dating again and soon got involved in another relationship. I would get the kids on the weekends. They seemed to be happy with me, and they would get quiet and sad Sunday evenings when I would take them back to their mother's house. I sensed that they were not happy with the situation at their mom's, and I realized that they would rather be with me. So I bought another home in Rockaway Red, New Jersey, which was only a few miles away from where the kids were. And I was right. It was only a little over a year when Diane and her mom had a falling out with one another and Diane came to live with me. It was as if she had been let out of a cage. She was bursting with happiness. The house I bought was a big one. Although old, it had 3 bedrooms and 2 baths, a living room, dining room, and a very large kitchen. I told Diane to pick a bedroom for herself. She picked the beautiful view overlooking the Rockaway Woods and began to decorate it and make it her own. A few short months later, David and then Michael came to live with me. Rose would only agree to this if I continued to pay child support for all 3 of them. I gladly agreed to do so. By this time, Rita had to sell her house and split the proceeds with her ex-husband. Her kids were now grown, and her youngest boy moved in with me. She was a great help to me at the time, but her and Diane did not get along at all, and sometimes they would hardly speak to one another. Upon coming to live with me, the boys had much of the same reaction as Diane. They acted as if they were let out of a cage. They both had their own rooms now, and I put very little pressure on them. I wanted all 3 of my kids to be happy. In hindsight, I believe that I was too easy on them, but I was living with a great deal of guilt over the divorce and breaking up our family. I was now showering them with material gifts, love, and freedom, probably too much freedom. For the next few years, the boys seemed to blossom. They had plenty of friends, good school, up-to-date clothes, etc. With Diane, it was different. As she started into her teens, she and her mom did not get along at all, and she had no female role model to go to for advice. She rebelled against anything Rita tried to do to help her with her growing pains. She was entering her middle teens, and by this time she was a drop-dead, gorgeous young lady who was being constantly pursued by boys. This was a nightmare for me. I was constantly screening boys that came to the house and checking on her when she was away from home. I felt hopeless in trying to help her. By this time, I was losing her to friends in high school, and some of them were not what you would call the good kids. Although I didn't see or know the kids that started her down the wrong path, they introduced her to drugs and alcohol. She became harder and harder to handle. She would spend lots of time away from home and in the company of older teens. She began seeing boys that were doing drugs and getting into trouble. All in all, they were very bad influences on her. One boy in particular got her pregnant, and because she was taking drugs, she eventually lost the baby in its 6th month. I don't believe she ever got over the guilt of losing her daughter, Stephanie, and she went deeper and deeper into drugs and alcohol. I spent days and months putting her in rehab facilities and going to meetings with her, but to no avail. She would relapse and go back to the same bad people who led her down this horrible path of destruction. As a last resort, I sent her down to Florida to live with my good friend's ex-wife, who was a childhood friend of mine, a very kind person. I thought she would make a good role model for Diane and help her stay straight. She took off with some bad kids the first night she was there. I had my friend send her back home with me. She was only home about a week when she took off for California with a guy who was in the army. Eventually, I paid her way back to New Jersey, and again, in a short space of time, she was gone with someone else. It went on and on like this for the next couple of years. There's much more to this story, but most of it is not pleasant. I'll just highlight a few events from here. By this time, I had moved back to Melbourne, Florida. Diane and Chuck and my two granddaughters moved in with me until I could help find them a place of their own. That didn't last long, and Diane and Chuck broke up when Diane started seeing other men. She lived in various places with other men for the next couple of years, and she was in and out of rehab many times during this time. I helped her as much as I could, but she would always go back to the same kind of people that were destroying her life. During this time, she would lose custody of her daughters, and I would take care of them, or my good friend's ex-wife, Alice, would take them. This happened more times than I would care to mention. Auntie Alice, as they called her, even wanted to adopt them, but the judge just kept giving them back to Diane. Alice finally gave up on trying to adopt them. She said, "I can't take having my heart broken again." I understand, for my heart had been broken a very, very long time. Each time she came out of rehab, she convinced the judge that she was straight and able to be a good mother to her kids. Of course, this didn't happen. She would relapse back into drugs and take her kids to places where they were exposed to some very bad people. Finally, her daughters were taken away from her for good, and Diane continued on her terrible path she had chosen. There is no doubt in my mind that Diane loves her daughters with all her heart. She was a great mother to them, and when she was sober, she never mistreated them. But the power of drugs was too much for her to deal with, and eventually, it got the best of her. The last time I heard from her was about 15 years ago. She was living in Jacksonville with another man. I don't know how many people know this, but right after she was born, and after I visited her mom and held Diane for the first time, I went home to an empty house. Feeling on cloud nine and periodically crying and laughing with happiness, I thought of another song that said it all for me in this magnificent day of my life. I was always a fan of the Broadway movie and musical Carousel, a fantastic musical play with beautiful music. Songs like You'll Never Walk Alone and If I Loved You, etc., to name a couple. But the one that came to mind as I sat on my sofa nursing a drink in celebration, I recalled the main character singing Soliloquy, an 8-minute beautiful song that moved me so very much emotionally. In the play, his wife is expecting a child, and she tells him so. He's delighted, and as it happens in the musical, he begins to dream out loud what it would be like to become a father. And he begins to sing about how great it would be to have a son, and he starts to sing about all the things him and his son would do together. Halfway through the song, he stops and realizes his new baby might be a girl. The next line he sings is, "You can have fun with a son, but you gotta be a father to a girl." The remainder of the song is all about him taking care of his daughter, if it is a girl, which it turns out to be. At this point, I put my drink down on the coffee table and I drag out of the closet a box of audio tapes and I started looking through them in hopes of finding an instrumental version of that song. I screamed out loud, "Yes," when I found it. Having been a singer all my life, I had some very sophisticated sound and recording equipment. The rest of my night, I spent singing and recording the second half of the beautiful song. I was finally satisfied after my fourth take at recording. I started crying during the first three and had to start all over again. I put away the tape that night and forgot about it for years. It wasn't until 16 years later that I remembered it. It was Diane's birthday. We had a dinner and a party for her. I arranged to have my tape played at the party and dance with her as I sang her the beautiful song. It was one of the most memorable, beautiful moments of my life. There were many such beautiful times we had with Diane as she was growing up. We did lots of things together as a family until I lost her to drugs and alcohol. In spite of her addiction, she was a very kind, caring, and loving child. Her downhill spiral started in her senior year in high school. She quit with only months to go before she was to graduate. I miss Diane every hour of the day and every day of my life. I hope that wherever she is, she's somehow happy and healthy. I miss her more than words can say. She was our firstborn. Some people asked me right after she was born if I was disappointed with our new baby girl. That was easy to answer. I had prayed for a daughter all through Rose's pregnancy, and God blessed us with my beautiful baby daughter, Diane. God had answered my prayers.
Smile for me, my Diane.
In David's testimony, he talked about recording a song for Diane when she was born that him and Diane danced to on her 16th birthday.
I do have that audio and want to play it for you. So without further ado...
First born, this infant with her mother's eyes is your firstborn. First child, this baby holds in his arms is their first child. Her smile will warm you on a cold winter night, and when life is stormy, her faith in you will make things right. First asleep in her crib now is your firstborn. If the good Lord's willing, he'll bless you with many more. But your firstborn is the child you've been waiting for. Firstborn, this infant with her mother's eyes is your firstborn. If the good Lord's willing, he'll bless you with many more. But your firstborn is the child you've been waiting for.
And I do have one more little audio clip to add for you guys. It is actually a short interview that Sherry was able to do with one of Diane's classmates, and they touch on kind of the rumors surrounding baby Stephanie.
But he knows, please don't tell anybody. So I didn't tell anybody. And then she was gone for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And when she came back to high school, she said, oh, I had this baby girl, and she had black curly hair, and she was so beautiful. But when she was born, her head hit the pan, which now I know as an adult that that doesn't make sense, and she passed away. Yeah, that's what she told everybody.
What actually had happened, and we're trying to figure out who the father was, because there's rumor that it was Kenny Fekowitz, and then there's rumor that it was Michael Rowe.
You know what? She was a year older than me, your mother, and she never told me. She just told me that the baby died.
Right. Yeah, she died. She died, she was born April 11th, 1985, and she died April 11th, 1985. She basically went to the hospital with stomach pains. She was actually only 23 weeks pregnant. I have the death certificate, Stephanie's death certificate.
You do?
Everything, yeah. I have someone taking care of her gravesite for me. She's buried in Denville, New Jersey.
She did die.
Yeah, so what happened was she went in with stomach pains. She was only like 23 to 32 weeks, they determined. And she told the nurse, I need to go to the bathroom, which, you know, nowadays they would never let you just be like, oh, you have to go pee? Go ahead. Go down the hall.
So she delivered the baby in the bathroom.
In the toilet, yeah. And as soon as she hit the toilet, you know, there was head injury. She didn't die at that very point. But, you know, after my mom held her for a little bit, I guess Rose says she passed away. So.
Oh, my God. So that was true. Here, I wanted to tell you, that you have a sister somewhere. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's totally okay. Hey, anything is exciting, whether, I know it already or not.
Thank you all for listening to part one of this episode update in the Seeking Diane series. The next episode is my interview with Sherry, and it's already available for you guys to listen to today. Don't forget to like, share, or retweet those missing and murder posts you see on social media. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.